I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is a CC Radio podcast.
It was just the most massive thing I've ever seen. To tell you the honest truth, I thought, well, we're the only ones left on this planet. Something's happened. We've missed something here.
The fear that went in me when I seen it was just the feeling, I'd say it was fear, but I've never felt that feeling before in my entire life.
It's a weird feeling, like you can't explain it when you don't know. You feel like you're being followed, but you don't know what it is.
We had two to our right, another one in front of us, another one to the left, and another one just across the road, shaking the daylight out of the tree. All we get was a big red eye.
I remember waking up and looking at the end of the bed, and there was a figure there, almost insect-like, and then I blacked out.
Welcome to the show, everyone. You are listening to Believe Paranormal and UFO Radio. My name is Cade Moyer, and thanks for tuning in. If you've had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au, or you can message me on Facebook at facebook.com/believeUFOradio. If you enjoy this episode, there are a few things you can do to help the show. Firstly, you can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Or you can share the show around social media with your friends and family, and that would help us grow. Tonight, I'm joined by Jane Pooley, and that's probably a name that you are quite familiar with because Jane is a little bit of a person of interest when it comes to the abduction and alien world here in Australia. Jane, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Cade.
It is incredible to have you on because when I heard your story, your encounter, it absolutely blew my mind because this is not something that a lot of people would come out and really talk about because I guess the encounters that happened to you and the little bit that I know, and I know there's a lot more to your story, it's very confronting. It's very full on. And I guess some people would be, not very open-minded to the situations that you've encountered. Are you able to take us back to when this all first started for you and I guess walk us through the timeline of these experiences?
Sure. Firstly, it is hard to come out, and it's probably why I waited until I was middle-aged. Of course, I understand people's reactions, but a surprising number of people have come to me and said, me too, so something's going on. So where it started, I actually remember being a toddler in a cot, and I had a grey man standing at the end of the bed who I knew, and I used to call him Grandpa, and that later evolved into Grandpa Graham. So that one experience, I had repeated dreams about all my life. So it just didn't leave me, even though I was very young. So it's a whole life experience. It's not something new. It just took me a long time to find the courage to say more than, look, I've seen UFOs. And I did it to help other people who were going through the same thing because I couldn't find anybody to talk to. I wasn't game to mention it to my GP. I didn't want a psych referral, quite frankly. but anyway, so it started when I was a toddler. That's what I remember. So Grandpa Graham would stand at the end of my bed, and I thought that he was a man with cow eyes when I was a bit older. So he had these great, big, beautiful black eyes. So that's my strongest memory and my first memory. So his eyes were like, they do have a pupil and an iris and a white bit, but it's so dark that they may as well all be black.
You could see all this detail, and you remember this from when you were a child.
Yep.
Wow. And when you say greys, the stereotypical image that comes to my mind is the one that I see, I guess, just plastered around in pop culture of, you know, the the teardrop head, the teardrop eyes that are pitch black. And from what you're saying, this seems to be pretty close to that.
Well, I wouldn't use the word teardrop. I would say just huge black eyes that are almost around to the side of their face. They're probably they're actually the shape of the in shape of sunglasses at the moment.
Okay, yeah, I get you.
Yeah, and their heads more have bumps on either side of them. They're larger heads compared to their bodies. That's not a teardrop either. But they do have a skinny body and extra long arms and extra long fingers. And because he picked me up as a baby, I remember how he smelt and how he felt.
Really?
Yeah, because it's just such a strong memory. So his skin was lovely and soft. A bit like a mushroom, I guess. It's easier as an adult to find a comparison, but as a child I had no idea. But he was cool, cool to touch as well.
And what did he smell like?
Woody, spicy, clean, but not the same as humans.
Okay. That's interesting because I've spoken to people who have had encounters with greys and things like that, but I've never actually heard anyone say they smelt it, which is that's really unique.
Yeah, I can't tell you why my memories are so strong, but I have to say that I'm a pretty good student without sounding like I want to blow my own trumpet because I have a really good memory for scenes. I seem to have a memory that just remembers details.
Yeah, right. Okay. And you know what? I guess with your encounters and all that, that's fantastic to have.
Yeah, I don't have a good memory for numbers or patterns or signs, but scenes and details and people I'm really good at.
So you were quite young, you were a toddler, and you were seeing a grey at the end of your bed. This grey was picking you up. How long did this continue through?
Throughout my entire life, but it's not every day. Months can go by, or years can go by before I'm taken again. But in between, I see a lot of ships around. And also we have to note that I don't remember everything. I just remember some things I remember what I remember, but there's got to be gaps because I feel that they sedate us to take us up there. And I think the reason I didn't forget this baby one is because they didn't drug me.
So you're saying the experiences that you've had later in life, there's less and less, I guess, that you remember about those?
No, I still remember a lot, and some memories are clearer than others, but the explanation for why people don't remember is they sedate us like we sedate people in an operation. Not a full anaesthetic, but we're sedated. However, I don't know. I just fight through, I think. I think I must have a strong spirit. Plus, I'm not frightened. I do remember being frightened at one point as a child. That's another story. But generally, I'm not frightened, and I'm pleased to see them. So perhaps I take less sedation. Who knows?
Yeah, that's interesting. You might be a little bit more accepting of this type of thing. So maybe they just go, well, you know what? We don't need to give her the X thing that makes them, I guess, a little bit calmer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right. So I don't tend to fight or kick or scream. I'm actually really pleased to see them, and I know some of them by name.
So how often were you getting taken? And do you think there was a reason you're getting taken from such a young age?
Well, yes, it's easy as an adult looking back. So just so that you understand where I'm coming from, at one point I had all these snippets of memories that didn't make sense. This is a while ago, a long time ago, really. And so for the sake of trying to work it out, I wrote each of those snippets of memories on a different piece of paper. And then because I want to organise them, I put them in time sequence, and then suddenly they were like pieces of a jigsaw that slotted together and it all made sense. So that helped me, and that might help somebody else too. So to my understanding, and I ask a lot of questions, the same man has picked me up every time, and that's the one I call Graham, or Grandpa Graham, and I've mentioned him quite a few times because he's just beautiful. I love him intimately, but by intimately I mean like a grandfather. Or like a family member. And the other reason I choose the word intimately is because of the way they communicate. They're a very emotional race, and they may not appear to be to some people because they don't have facial expressions or body language, but they project emotion just like they project words.
Am I right to understand what you're saying is that they don't communicate in a traditional way where they speak with their mouth or anything like that?
That's correct. Their natural language is telepathy. And they, for whatever reason, and I think it's a technological device, they can speak every language. I think they've got it like a translator. So when they speak to you, they put words in your head and you know they're not your own thoughts. And you can say no, so you don't feel violated. And they're usually in your own language. They certainly have been in my own language, even the colloquialisms I might use. So, but I hear in the background a sort of a click, click, cluck, cluck, cicadas, crickets, sort of sound, trilling maybe. I mean, a combination of all of those things. And I think that that's their language, though I couldn't translate that for you.
Oh, right. Okay. That's interesting because, you know, that definitely shows that there might be some type of, I guess, technology being used to do that then.
I think so. I think the telepathy is natural. That's their basic language. But the technology, the translator is definitely tech. See, that's the thing. A lot of these things that people think are paranormal or magic or whatever they want to call them are actually just technology. Theirs is just more advanced than ours.
So are you saying that you could potentially find a link between the extraterrestrials and paranormal encounters here on Earth?
Of course. Of course. A lot of people might, because they've got technology to become invisible, cloaking, people tend to confuse them with ghosts or spirits. Because they're, what's the word, phlegmatic, so they don't show emotion, a lot of people might suggest that, or not a lot of people, some people might suggest that they are autistic or robots or clones. I've heard all of those theories. They're not. They're people, and I really cannot emphasize this enough. They're as much people as we are. They're no different to me and you than maybe an Asian woman and a Negro man are to an Anglo-Saxon. You know, and we're all human. We're all exactly the same on the inside. So they look a little bit different, but they're still human-like, and they have families, culture, love, language, all sorts of things.
You know, that's really interesting insight because, I mean, from a third-party look at something like this, it's quite easy to go, you know, maybe they're just these clones, these types of robot types of things, because I hear so many theories and, you know, I guess at this stage I have to kind of figure that, you know, every theory could potentially be 100% correct because there's no way for me to validate those in any other way. But when there's someone like you who comes on the show who's had these firsthand encounters with these types of things, it really does humanize them, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, they are. They love. And they've got a body and a soul and they've got the same God as us. You know, we all call him something different, but honestly, they are. I have trouble calling them a different species, which they may be biologically. I think they're a different race. So that's just the way I see them. And it's hard not to. When you get to know them, you love them. And to say that they're clones or they all look the same is ridiculous because they're all different heights. They've got different faces. That's like saying all Asians look the same. Of course they bloody don't. Or all cats look the same. They don't either.
Yeah, no, that's an absolutely fair point. It's I guess I was a little bit alien racist there.
So as far as I'm concerned, they're welcome here. They really are. And I'm saying they've got a different culture, but they haven't got that much of a different culture. You know, they may speak differently and express their emotions differently. But like I said, they've still got families and love and they eat and they walk and they, you know, their environment is different to ours. It's much darker, much cooler and very quiet. First thing you notice is how quiet it is. There's no clutter or people talking.
And I guess if all their communication is done telepathically, I mean, it would be absolutely quiet everywhere.
Incredibly quiet. And especially in space. It's like we always have, you know, it can be quiet here on Earth, but there's always some sort of buzz in the background going on. There, you notice how quiet it is. It's just amazing.
Am I safe to presume that you've been taken aboard these crafts or things like that?
Yes, I'm sorry, I've jumped ahead. I have. So how often it's happened? The next time I remember, I was 8. So whether it happened in the middle, I don't know, but there does seem to be a pattern. when I speak to other people about when they take us. So when I was 8, I woke up in the, I knew they were coming first. I was just terrified going to bed. And this is the only time I was frightened. And I woke up in midair above my bed and just below the ceiling, in my body, before you ask, not just physically, my body was levitating. And I screamed for my mother and no sound came out and I couldn't move. And then I heard a male voice saying, she's not supposed to wake up. And then I was asleep again. So that's the only time I was afraid. But I think if a child wakes up mid-air, they're going to be frightened, don't you?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Today, even now, as a fully grown adult, I think I would be crapping my pants.
Well, yes. I mean, I've become used to it. They can take me. I now don't mind the feeling. I've never really particularly liked heights, and I think that's why. But I'm okay with it. Now I understand the whys. So they could take me fully conscious right now, and it just isn't an issue.
It's just normal for you now.
Yeah, it's normal for me. So a lot of times over my life, but as I said, there can be gaps of years or months, or they can take me a few times at once. And what is the point of it all? They're doing breathing experiments, and they don't choose us because we're anything special. They choose because we've got something on our DNA that they want. And the history of it, I do understand now, and again, the benefit of hindsight, is that after Roswell, Eisenhower agreed to taking a certain number of us for breeding experiments in exchange for technology. Now, my biological father was actually in the army in Iceland just at that time.
Really?
Yeah. So, you know, all of this, it's taken me quite a while to piece together that I fit the pattern. And now I think I could write a list of questions, and if you tick the boxes, you're an abductee.
It could be the Jane Pooley's checklist for abductees.
Oh, dear. But anyway, so there is a pattern, and other abductees are experienced. They may describe things differently. They may remember more, they remember less, but they are doing it at the same ages and similar things are happening. Well, the same things are happening to them.
Yeah, right. That's so there's definitely, this is not the right word, but a formula to how this works then.
Yes, and in my observation only, I'm not an expert, I'm just a witness, they pretty much organise it the same way as we might organise an experiment on Earth, only it's on a much larger scale with different tech. So they've got groups, and for want of a way of explaining it, we'll say they've got groups of perhaps 20, and they'll take those children, and they'll vary a few years between them. Each time they do a check, they'll take all of those children, and they might be all in the one country, or they usually don't live too far apart. And, you know, and I'll have to backtrack, but back to being a baby, I remember lying on a table. So Grandpa Graham would take me up in a light tunnel or a light in an elevator through a hole in the bottom of a ship, through the ceiling, and lay me on a table. And when you're a baby, you just accept. I mean, if your father picked you up, or you picked up your daughter, put her in the car and took her somewhere, she's not going to object.
Of course.
Yeah, so it was just like that. It was like, okay, Grandpa Graham's come to get me. That's fine. I'll just go where he tells me. But I just remember things like the table was cold. Like they took blood. All they did with me then, it was certainly no abuse, was take blood out of my arm, out of the inside of my elbow like you would here on Earth. But they didn't use a needle. They just put something over me and I felt a sort of a drawing or a sucking and they seemed to take a sample of blood, or that's how I understand it as an adult. And then he put me back. So they didn't really do anything harmful and they were terribly kind and gentle. So they organise experimental groups of children and they follow them through life. And even though I've said it's breeding experiments, obviously I'm past breeding. I don't have any age hang-ups. I've just turned 59. But they're still taking me.
That makes me wonder if there is multiple levels to their experiments then, because like it's obvious, you know, as a very young child, there's no use for, I guess, the experimental breeding. No. During those middle years of your life, Absolutely. But when you're in the period of life that you are in now, perhaps they're looking for other things.
Well, I think they want to. Yes, I know because I keep asking so many questions. I drive them mad with questions, but they're happy to answer, interestingly, that, you know, they're manipulating our DNA, if you like, or they're gene splicing our DNA.
Okay. And are they doing that in you as a living person, or are they taking – oh, okay.
So they must have done that with my father, and they must have done that with me in utero. My mother will freak when I've said that. And they must have done that with me as a baby, because I've watched them do the same thing to at least one of my children here on Earth.
It's not just you that they're interested in. It's also other members of your family.
Yes. So they go down a line, basically. You know, the first group, obviously aliens have been around a lot longer than that, but the first experimental group in this particular experiment was in the late 40s. And so that would have been my father, and then me, and then my children, and then my grandchildren. And to my knowledge, that's as many generations as this particular experiment has.
Right. So there's obviously something in your genetic code that they find interesting.
Well, when I asked why me, that's what they said. Well, first of all, you've already inherited that. We've inserted that DNA in your father. You've inherited it from him. We've inserted more in you. And on it goes. And I think that they insert little bits of their DNA at different stages of our lives. So we become, to simplify it, more and more that race. Obviously, I'm human, but there's each generation has become more hybridized. And that word humalian, I just made it up, right? And I know that it's out there and other people have used it now, but I made it up first.
Trademarked.
Because I thought hybrid sounded like a car, and I just wanted something a little more sensitive.
No, it's I really do like that word, because, like you said, when you say hybrid, it sounds a little bit too coarse. Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And I must give my granddaughter credit, my oldest granddaughter. She sort of helped me make up the word too.
So how does your family respond to these things? Because,
oh my
God,
they think I'm crackers. My friends believe it. My family doesn't.
Right. Even though these experiences could potentially be happening to them right now.
Well, one evening, the whole family was out the back, and we saw five red lit ships going very slowly, very close, very clear. All of us saw them. We all went to bed that night, and the next morning, and I don't want to mention my children on Earth's names just to protect them a bit.
Yeah, but no, of course.
Yeah. My eldest son came down for breakfast and said, Mum, the aliens came and took me last night, and there are children there, and it was really fun, and can I bring them home for dinner?
Oh, wow.
Yes, all right then. I just thought he'd had a dream, and I thought, well, hang on a minute, we did see ships last night. Just to humour him, I said, sure, what do you want me to cook for them? And he said, oh, do aliens like spag bol? So it was all like that. And you know, kids say things, as I'm sure you know, being a parent, or you will know when she's older, and you just play the game. But it stuck in my mind as real.
Yeah.
It was just something about it. So, but he now as an adult just dismisses it and can't cope with it. And when I brought it up to him, he said, but the newspaper said they were Chinese lanterns. And I said, yeah, I know they did, but you know what you saw.
Yeah, yeah. Deep down, there would be a layer of truth that he knows what's going on there.
I do believe so. So, yeah, I do have two granddaughters, and it's certainly happening to one of them and may well happen to the other. I can't know yet.
How do you feel about that? Is that something that you're comfortable with?
Well, no, I'm... I love that one of my granddaughters totally believes me because she's seen things too. And she said my book is awesome. And I did write it so that above 12, I'd say, could cope with it. It's not a frightening book. It's fairly simply written because I didn't want to frighten people. So, you know, that's nice. One of my family members believes me, but all of my friends believe me. So, you know, it's not easy, and any hesitation you hear in my voice is embarrassment, and I know that I'll be called crackers by my family if they hear this, and, well, bad luck, because we have to do what's right at the end of the day, and I believe I'm standing up for the truth, and there is a cause behind all this, and the world is changing and other people are going through it, and someone has to step forward no matter how hard it is.
And now a quick word from our sponsor.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Also, are you wanting more content? Why not become a Believe Plus member? You'll get access to exclusive podcasts and episodes that aren't available to the public. Not only that, you'll also get our regular feed without any ads. Head to believepod.com/plus to sign up today for just $5 a month. With all this going on, have they ever told you what they've done with the hybrid breeding program that you've been a part of? Because In some interviews that I've seen with you, you have these Humalian children.
I do. I have three, and I have one granddaughter, and the eldest daughter is married. They probably don't call it married there, but, you know, partnered with another Humalian man. And they've all got names, and I've met them, and I've hugged them, and they're as physical as you and I. And also, at the time, I was very aware that I was pregnant, and it didn't always make sense on Earth, but it did. It was scientifically provable in that I had positive pregnancy blood tests, which is important because urine tests can be wrong. I'd have ultrasounds, and I'd have to have D&Cs, you know, the sort of the clean out operation at the end. And doctors were always baffled that on one ultrasound there'd be a fetus and on the next there wouldn't be, and yet there'd still be all the other elements of pregnancy. So it's quite – that's the part I find very hard to deal with. Even though I'm quite cheerful and I love the rest of it, they took my babies and I'm angry about that.
Yeah.
They took them from my body. And people say, well, you have to get over that. Well, I'll never get over that.
No, that's incredibly invasive.
Yeah. And I don't believe I consented to that. I didn't know that's what was coming. So, it's an emotional thing. So
absolutely it would be. And not only the, I guess, the traumatic experience of going through all that, you will have the real life repercussions of, I guess, people will be asking, and especially health professionals, there would be a lot of questions that I believe would get asked about what happened to that.
I've had very confused doctors, honestly, very confused. I've also met plenty of doctors that believe all this and already know what's going on. So there's two, you know, there's those that have their eyes closed or their mind closed, and there's those that are open. For example, you know that I am a nurse. I don't work practically, but I still study. And in emergency departments, I've seen some pretty interesting stuff. So what I'm just talking about with myself, I did see once on another woman, but she got all the way to 8 months pregnant. I only got to 4 or 5 months pregnant. And she had a baby on ultrasound with doctor's proof, doctor's consults. And then she came into the emergency department, which wouldn't normally happen. They'd normally go to the delivery ward, but this was a weekend at night, whatever. I got her anyway. And I did an ultrasound on her and couldn't find a fetus. But seeing as that's not my specialty, emergency is, I went and got somebody else to look because you doubt yourself. Sure enough, no baby. Now, that woman had a baby and she knew it was taken, and she came to the hospital and nobody believed her, and she was admitted to the psych ward, which distressed me no end, and I'll still never forget. Now, that's called a phantom pregnancy. We've got a name for it. It's not uncommon, but there's another explanation for the possibility of a phantom pregnancy.
Do you think that happens more often than I guess people would expect?
I do. So, and then again, just on that vein of thought, when I was a student nurse at a major Sydney hospital, we all gave donated blood, and my blood results were weird. And I got called up by the boss, I suppose. I just don't want to give any names, but, you know, some famous doctors were involved. And they said to me, you have the blood results of an astronaut, and we know, obviously, you're not an astronaut. We believe you're an alien abductee. That was said to my face.
You're kidding.
No, and I'll tell you, I'll name dead people. Victor Chang was one of them. Victor Chang, the heart transplant doctor, was one. He took me under his wing, and it was him who pointed me out.
That would have floored me.
It did, and I didn't understand then. But again, in hindsight, now I do. So what happened then was they really did take me under their wing, and I really did see an awful lot of stuff that other people don't.
Wow.
And that's why, because they thought I could answer their questions. Well, I couldn't then, but I can now.
That's incredible.
So they took me, the boss nurse, a boss of the School of Nursing, took me and four or five of my fellow students, I guess, so it didn't look like it was just me, to an unmarked door that was locked in the basement. And they took us in, and there was one of those really old-fashioned medical specimen libraries in jars of formaldehyde, you know, like
yeah,
you've
seen yeah.
And this is not that long ago. These were really old specimens. And I walked straight up to one that was a grey alien baby, fully formed.
You're and just went, oh. Kidding.
No. And first thing I did and said, oh, yeah, what's that? And I recognised it. And she said, that's exactly what we thought you'd do. Come on, girls.
Wow.
So I saw one on Earth. I mean, of course I've seen them in ships, but I saw one on Earth, and there were other witnesses, and some people may listen to this interview and remember that.
That's incredible. I don't know what to say because, you know, that really leads a lot of credence to the fact that there is obviously a lot of knowledge about this stuff going on, especially in just the general medical world.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Nurses and doctors that work in emergency see so much weird stuff that most of them would believe this. I wouldn't tell your average GP or you're going to get referred to a psychiatrist. But they may or may not believe. I mean, there is a lot of evidence. It's like the government lies to us. Let me tell you, the medical world does too.
I don't know what to say. That absolutely floors me. The fact that, you know, you've had an experience that you couldn't explain, and then you've given blood, and one of your mentor doctors has said your blood basically says you've been in outer space. That
yep.
that would have floored me absolutely to no degree of explanation.
Yes. Now, I should add something personal just for anybody listening because, you know, there are people who'll be able to understand what I'm saying and not even know more than me. I do have lupus, so I have a weird blood result anyway, but we didn't know that then. And my blood results don't look like that now, and I would have been going into space a lot more then because that was during my fertile years.
You've got these Humalian children. They've got their own lives. They've got their own families.
They do.
What do they look like?
Yeah, well, actually, I've got one daughter and two sons and a granddaughter and as I said, her husband. So she looks quite a lot like me in the face, but she's little and small, like small boobs. I can't say it any other way. I have big boobs, so she doesn't genetically look like my body. Yeah, it's just the way it is. And she's skinny and little like the Greys are, but she still looks a lot like me.
That's incredible. So you can genuinely see aspects of both, I would call these species or races, intertwining.
I can. And it's no different. Looking at my children, it's as if, like, had I married an Asian man, my children were half Asian, I would see that in them, right? So I'm seeing the Greys in them.
What I'm hearing here, and this may be part of why they're doing these experiments, is that our DNA is really lining up quite well with theirs to produce fully functioning, fully, I guess, responsive people.
Absolutely. Now, because I've questioned Graham so much, he says guiltily, sadly, that they did lose a lot at the beginning of the experiment, but they've worked it out a lot too. There are consequences. There's no question there's health consequences. Every abductee I've ever met, I guess I don't like the word abductee, but it's still that is what's going on, has autoimmune disease of some description. And that makes a lot of sense to me because you're injecting a foreign DNA in there and our bodies are producing antibodies to the foreign DNA, and that's what we do. So then instead, somebody with an autoimmune disease produces antibodies to their own DNA, to the human DNA. So there are consequences, but they're ironing them out. And it does seem that as it goes down the generations, it's improving.
Have they alluded to why they're doing this crossbreeding?
Well, they haven't alluded. I've questioned them intently, intensely. As honestly, I must drive them mad. Apparently, this particular race, and there are a lot of races out there, a lot of inhabited planets, so many, it's ridiculous, and we're just ignorant to think otherwise. But this particular race, their planet died off for whatever reason, might have been naturally occurring, might have been a war, I don't know, but it's not there anymore. And so they had to build an artificial planet, which was this massive mothership that I've mentioned that I've been on. And they needed to find a planet to inhabit. And now this is what we're doing with Mars, isn't it? Trying to find somewhere else to live in case our planet dies off.
It's eerily similar, isn't it?
That's right. So they actually said to me, it's just like you're doing, only we're further ahead. So, but then because they have, in my observation, they're colder, their eyes are bigger, their environment's different. So they struggle with the sunlight because their planet was darker. They struggle with, they breathe slower and more shallowly than we do, and they use less oxygen, which is actually why they're grey in colour. And so it's like, you know, the theory of evolution is that we were all black once and then we lived in maybe iced country, snowy, frosty, cold countries and we developed white skin. Well, it's just like that. They're basically just trying to evolve enough to live here. They can come here, but only for a few hours or they get sick too.
Are you saying that they're trying to get their race to a point where they can live on Earth or live in more our solar system?
No, this is Earth. And I think that there are other experiments, or I believe that there are, with other planets doing exactly the same thing. So they're just trying to find, one, a new home, two, adapt to be able to live there. And it's no, again, I'll give earthly examples. It's no different to the English invading, if you want, or discovering Australia and mixing with the Aboriginals. No different at all.
Well, just on that note there, is there anything that is stopping them from invading us? Is there a treaty with us Earthlings or something like that?
They don't want to invade us. They're a peaceful people. They just want to live here and they want to share the planet. And if anything, they want to help us not destroy our planet because they've already put generations of experimenting into it.
They've invested too much into us.
That's right. But no, they're. I mean, there's good. There's going to be good and bad, and I have obviously been fortunate enough to meet the good ones. But basically, they're a gentle, peaceful race. So that's it. But the other big thing that was the answer to me asking these questions was that they say all their knowledge is stored on their DNA and they know how to access it. So they want, if their race dies off, they want their DNA and us so that their knowledge is still living. It probably does on our DNA too, but we haven't worked out how to access it.
Right, so all their history is hidden in their genetic code essentially.
Yeah, and to support that theory, I don't believe in reincarnation. I think it's more likely things happen that need explaining, but I think it's more likely our ancestors' memories stamped on our DNA. And that makes sense when Grandpa Graham tells me that everything about them and all of their ancestors is in their DNA.
Yeah, absolutely. It's if that's the way that they explain that type of history, it really does lead a lot of credence to that type of mindset.
They're very good at explaining. Now, obviously, they're way, way ahead of me in intellect and education. I don't think they're heaps smarter than humans, but I think they're a bit smarter. But I always walk by understanding.
You know, that's one of the hardest things to do is if, you know, you're explaining something that you're quite educated on and putting it into a layman's terms. It's incredible that, you know, if they are that more advanced than us, that they're able to, and I don't mean to sound terrible when I say this, but to dumb it down to our standards, I think that's fantastic. That's a really good way of communicating.
Yeah. Well, they usually give me an analogy. They say, well, it's like this on Earth. So with the DNA, it's like a library.
Just before we wrap up there tonight, Jane, I do want to ask you a couple of questions because these questions are burning on my mind, and it's kind of your Humalian children, how do they feel about what they are? Because I would imagine that they would be a very, very small population in, and I guess what the alien community would be. And are they hidden from the rest of the alien community? Because is this something that's not public knowledge, or is it something where they're kind of embraced?
No, there are lots and lots and lots of Humalian children and young adults on this mothership living in this community. So, no, they're fully accepted. I also find that the greys aren't racist like humans. It just doesn't, they're just not. It's not there. So they don't understand it. And they're right too. Humans are all equal.
Absolutely.
How they feel about it, well, my eldest, my daughter, Claire, it doesn't matter if I say her name because she's not on Earth to be tracked down and harmed. She wanted to see me. For me, it was meet me, but she seemed to remember having met me before when she was first pregnant. And that's because suddenly she understood what it was like to have this child inside her and not want to part with the child. However, they're all different ages. So my second son was angry, angry, angry. Who are you? You've never been here in my life. You're not my mother. Blah, 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 just like a surly teenager on Earth, frankly.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't blame him, and it broke my heart. The littlest one took his big sister's example, and when she came up and hugged me, he ran up and hugged me too. So they were all different responses. My granddaughter, Amelia, Claire brought her up, and she was just completely and utterly accepting because she was a baby, obviously. So, yeah, the full gamut of emotions. And I felt like the old person with Alzheimer's who didn't remember who they were, even though I should have. However, I did recognise them. I think I've met them a lot of times over my life, but this particular memory I'm talking about now was just a very clear one. And hugging them, you recognise your own child immediately. You just do. And they were, you know, so physically real, and the emotions were so raw and real from all directions, and the greys project their emotions so well, I understood exactly what was going on around me, that there's no way anyone can tell me that wasn't real. You can't make up mother love. You can't make up physical touch. You can't make up an angry teenager, even though it's logical. They're part of the community. Claire's now married another Humalian man, as I said earlier. When you weren't recording, sorry. And, they're happy there. Their life is good. It's just grief talking. I'm satisfied with the way they've done things, but clearly I'd rather have brought up my own children.
Yeah, and that would be really tough because, I mean, if I was separated from my daughter, it would be absolutely heartbreaking. And would be really, really difficult for you, I could imagine, because not only were you taken away from them, but you have these very limited memories of them as well. So every time time you met them, there would be something that you felt was just missing from that.
Oh, it's dreadful. And all of my life and still – and again, you know, I'm sure that I can put a positive spin on all of this. I have repeated nightmares of my children being stolen from me, running around looking for them, calling 000, calling the police, no one being able to help me, and my children were stolen from me. And it's a nightmare that never, never leaves me. So I know where it comes from. I know exactly what's going on, and understanding is certainly the key to coping. But perhaps that's where I am in my evolution of this thing. I'm comfortable with everything else. I have some understanding of what's going on. I like the race. I recognise the people. But I'm never, ever going to let go of grief from my children.
Yeah. And that's something that will be with you forever, because that's something that you just can never get that back.
No, you can't. And it's cruel. It's just cruel. And I've said that to Graham. He's just very sheepish, and he said, look, we know that now, but at the beginning of the experiment, we had no idea what a human would feel about it. And, you know, it's I know that it's different for a woman and the child's actually inside you. But as you rightly said, as a father, you still love and bond to that child. And if she was suddenly taken away from you, you'd be mortal. You'd be just heartbroken.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. My heart really does go out for you, because I could only imagine the pain that you went through in those moments.
But it is comforting to know that not only they're okay, but they're happy and they're away from all of this that's going on Earth at the moment, and that they've got families, they've got people that love them. And Grandpa Graham, I do believe, is my DNA donor, so he's biologically actually my grandfather, even though he wasn't with my grandmother. Scientifically, he's still my grandfather, so he's looking after his own family, and they're loved and they're cared for. But you know, I think you can hear in my voice. That's not something you can make up.
No, not at all, not at all. And look, Jen, I really do want to thank you for coming on the show. It has been so emotional, so I guess mind opening, because it's so easy to put down, you know, alien abductions and things like that to such sci-fi kind of levels that it's quite easy to forget the emotional connections and things that can happen during these types of events.
Yeah, and I hope that my sharing such personal information will help other people, because it's hard to share that. But I really do want others that are suffering and unable to find the courage to speak out to find some comfort in that they're not alone, and that their feelings are justifiable and understandable, and that they're not going crazy.
And that's going to do it for tonight. And remember, if you have had an encounter, get in touch with me. My email address is believe@ccradio.com.au. Or you can message me on Facebook, and that's facebook.com/believeUFOradio. Until next time, stay safe, and you've been listening to Believe, Australian Paranormal and UFO Radio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.